Well, this next story starts out a little grotesquely. A few years ago, when Julia Enders was 17, she developed a sore on her leg that stubbornly refused to disappear. And soon other sores appeared on her body, and despite the efforts of a range of doctors and medications, nothing seemed to help them heal. So she started researching. And then she researched some more. And then a little more. And she read about other similar cases that had followed courses of antibiotics, and she began to make a link between her skin's condition and the health of her intestines. Yes, her gut. And this fascination about how the gut's function affects all kinds of aspects of our health led her to study medicine. The result, in her 20s, is an international blockbuster best-selling book for this young author and scientist. It's called Gut, the Inside Story of Our Body's Most Underrated Organ. It's just been published in Australia. Julia, now in her mid-20s, is doing her doctorate at the Institute of Microbiology in Frankfurt, and she joined me on the line a little earlier.
Hello.
Hello to you. Look, you describe this book rather cheekily as a field guide to the feces. It has become an international hit, 1.3 million copies sold in Germany alone. And I know that Germans, my German friends, pay good attention to their gut health. But has the response been, has it been a shock to you, the response?
Well, I think the biggest shock was really when one of my videos of my science slam, a little talk you do to explain your favorite science area. It was back in 2012 when this video got 2,000 clicks. I was really shocked. And everything that came after was better and was okay, because I realized, well, I think that the message is important. I want the gut to have a better publicity, a better understanding with people, and if that's the way to go, then it's okay.
Yes.
And I'm actually now really happy that people are looking at it in a more positive and understanding way.
You've become a cheerleader of the gut, in effect, and we'll come.
Yeah,
that's right. We'll come to the fact that science has perhaps not paid enough attention to the gut. But you were just 17 when this intestinal journey of yours began. What link was made between the sores on your skin and your gut?
Well, there are very different reasons for having skin conditions like that and sores like that. And for me, it just turned out that it was really associated to eating gluten. And this is a actual disease, and it's a form of celiac disease, but it's just really hard to diagnose right away. So it was actually really a journey. But during that journey, I just discovered all those little experiments that could help me with my immune system, and that then finally led me to find a way how to deal with this.
Mm, so you had celiac.
I just realized the gut has just so much more power and influence on many, many body functions, immune system, you know, metabolism, things like body weight or even mood, and all those things I just discovered due to my sores.
The relationship between mood and food and our gut fascinates me. You suggest that in this century we've been diligently investigating our brains and our cardiovascular and nervous systems, and yet you describe the gut as our body's most underrated organ, and that Western doctors don't learn enough about the gut in their training. On what basis do you make that argument?
Well, I think it's just a very central organ. When we look at just the rough facts, we see it has the largest surface area and communicating with the outer world. And we see it has 2/3 of the immune system. It can make about 20 hormones of its own, and then billions of bacteria producing all kinds of things that can regulate our genetics, up to 20,000 genes that just produce so many things, and connected to metabolism as well as to the mood. So I think I wouldn't have expected to learn about those kind of things when I started reading about the gut. And I think so do many other people. They just would think, you know, you go to the toilet and that's it, but there's just so much more to it. And I'm very happy now that actually medicine is really taking this subject on, and it's become a great research area of our time.
Curiously, though, if we think about ancient Chinese medicine and some of the yoga traditions, they seem to have been quite obsessed with the gut for a long time.
Yeah, and it's really interesting how those things sometimes come together. When in Heidelberg, Germany, a research team showed the three types of gut bacteria, the three types of gut floras that can be found. Doctors from traditional Chinese medicine visited them because they also have three types of digesters, and they wanted to know if there's maybe a link. And finding a new science area that is finally kind of an interesting melting point of different medicine cultures is, I think, very exciting. And we might not be able to make all the links, but some probably, and that's really cool.
Yeah, although there are quite a lot of claims made about gut health for which there is limited evidence, so we can come to that. Mm. One of the most profound realizations and emerging understandings in this book is the connection between our gut and our mood, states of mind and our gut health, our mental health and our gut health, and our behaviour and our gut health. Just let's explore that, because, of course, the gut, in effect, has its own nervous system, a big, vibrant, active nervous system to rival the brain.
Yes, so I think the idea behind it is actually not so strange sounding at all. When you look at it, the brain is very isolated. It's in a bony skull, it has a thick skin around, and it needs information to put together the feeling of how am I right now? You know, the feeling when I go in the tub, I put my head under the water, I don't see, I don't hear, how am I right now? And we've had great researchers looking into all the nerves and where they go in the brain, and that there might be a little map that collects all this information. And the gut has very essential information. It knows not only all the molecules that nurture us and that are in our food, it knows, you know, two-thirds immune system and hormones and all those things. It can pack an information package and send to the brain. And some of the questions that also pointed towards the gut having this influential role was, for example, that people with irritable bowel syndrome or inflammatory bowel disease just have higher risks of having anxiety or depression. And we just now we have to figure out how much influence can there be. And we've seen in first experiments, not only with animals, which showed some great and very interesting results, basically changing animals' behavior sometimes from being very shy to being very curious.
Well, let's just pause on that.
Different bacteria.
Yes, that's an amazing study, because that took two populations of mice that have been bred for very particular behaviors, timid mice and fairly exploratory, gregarious mice, and they cleared them of stomach bacteria, replaced them with each other's stomach bacteria, and the behavior changed. I mean, that is extraordinary work. Has that sort of work been replicated in humans?
Well, what we have done in humans is we had a study in 2013, for example, where people had been taken certain kinds of probiotics or bacteria for 4 weeks, and they had a brain scan before and after. And you could actually see that their activity pattern in an area of the brain that is responsible for emotion processing really changed. And we also had a control group which didn't have those bacteria, and it didn't. So I think this was the first experiment where everybody was really surprised that it worked so well on humans too.
Mm. You know? But this is such new work, isn't it? You talk about the self being created in both our head and our gut.
Yeah, I think this was fueled by research from Bud Craig, a researcher who really put this theory up that there's this little aisle that will create a feeling of how am I. And then researchers like Emra Maya, who showed that the gut is very essential in this map as well, and might have a big part of this map to put his information on. That's just the understanding of being a whole body. I think we've kind of lost this, although it's actually really logical. We're not only a brain and a computer screen, although that's how we feel many of the time. You know? And the whole body can contribute to our feeling, and the gut is very, very essential. And actually in biology, we see that the gut brain was actually the first brain that creatures had. And then later on, there was a bonus of having this central organ in the brain that will then manage everybody else. You know?
Yeah. How is the brain in our skull connected to the brain in our gut?
We have this one nerve. You can anatomically see it during my studies. When we did dissection, I saw it too. It just basically goes from the gut through the diaphragm in between the lungs And then through your throat, up on the backside of your head, it goes into your brain. So that's one very visible, simple connection. And we can actually see in experiments that you can stimulate this nerve and it will cause people to feel anxious or feel very well and relaxed. And actually, this is one of the roots that is already a therapy in depression, for example. Then we have other ways of the gut communicating to the brain. It can be bacteria that can produce tiny molecules that go to our blood and then can be delivered to the brain. It can be how the immune system is doing, because I think we all know when we have, you know, a cold or something, we sometimes feel whiny or not so well in our skin. You know, we don't feel well because our immune system is in a bit of panic. The immune system has its role too. And then, of course, all those hormones that can be produced by the gut, they might have their tasks too. But I think the main aspect that research is looking at is this nerve that really connects gut and brain.
This is the vagus nerve.
Exactly.
There's a kind of lack of sophistication at the moment in understanding this relationship between the flora in our gut and our behaviour, and certainly with an experience like irritable bowel syndrome, people have been accused of malingering, of hypochondria, and yet it seems that there's an emerging understanding that stress affects the physiology of the gut. How so?
Yeah, and I really like those topics because oftentimes we feel like our body is weak or broken in some terms. And with stress, for example, many people react very sensible with their gut also when they are stressed. They might be so nervous they throw up, or they have a nervous diarrhea, or they can't eat at all, or they need to eat to be calm. You know, there's very different ways. And with huge stress, usually people try to get out food, you know, throwing up or diarrhea is a way to get rid of food very fast and not having put the energy in to digest it. So when you do this, you don't have to feel like you have a weak body. It's actually the gut saving up energy it would otherwise use to digest, to get rid of food, so you have some energy left to really tackle a problem. And this is a good thing that can be nice for a short stress situation. But what we have nowadays is that people have stress for a very long time. And during stress, you can visibly see there's less blood flow in our gut. So the walls really turn from pinkish to white. It's actually visible. Wow. And then there's less protection mucus because of less blood and so on, and less immune cells being delivered, you know, other things from blood flow, oxygen and so on. So there's a whole different weather down there. And if you have this weather for too long, you kind of change the landscape. And I think that's just interesting to understand.
I love the way you describe, therefore, that we can be both a victim of the flora in our gut, but we can also be a gardener of our gut.
Yeah,
and I wonder exactly what your assessment then is of the evidence so far for the use of probiotic products, because you suggest that the evidence is actually quite poor and yet they're being sold on our shelves. And I've had an interesting experience of having my appendix removed this year. And actually, the surgeon and the doctor said, well, there's no evidence for probiotics, but I support their use, which was very intriguing to me. So what is the evidence for probiotics?
Yeah, probiotics being good bacteria that will be mostly alive when they get to your large intestine and that have to be provably, you know, healthy for you in some way. And I think the important thing is really to differentiate what you want to achieve with that. Because for some areas and for some certain bacteria, because probiotic bacteria can be so different. They have different genetics. They can do very, very different things. So you have to look at what kind of area you want to do something with. First of all, I'm a supporter of self-experiments as long as they can't harm you. And probiotics, usually, if you don't have a severe disease with your immune system or something, they can't harm you. So it's interesting sometimes to try, you know. But I think you really have to know what you want to go for. And for that, sometimes simply Googling, was there a big, large study that showed that this strain of bacteria worked for my condition, can be a good idea. And then there are some fields where you can try and you will see if it works out. But then there are other fields, I think, where we actually have pretty good evidence already now. It just really depends on what you want to do. With, for example, children that have to take antibiotics, I think in the next few years, we will have the intake of probiotics after an antibiotic treatment in children as a recommendation, because we see that with the disturbance of flora through antibiotics, they have a higher risk of having irritated bowel syndrome, for example, also just diarrhea and some disturbances in that digestion. So with those very digestive-related things like diarrhea after antibiotics or in general diarrhea, I think the evidence is actually pretty good. And then there are other areas where people will sell it to you as a kind of a wellness product. And I think there you really have to be a little careful and try to not be so gullible. The thing is, we've always
don't waste your money
in our diet. Yeah, just be careful and see if it really has an effect on you. We have actually always used probiotic. Every bigger people on this planet, older people, peoples like Germany or Korea and all those cultures, they all have their probiotics. The Germans have the sauerkraut, that's why they're called the krauts in Korea. We have kimchi and so on. So it was actually always a part of our diet. You can also have this just in local products sometimes and don't have to spend a whole lot of money if it's not for a certain proved cause.
Mm.
I think something for everyday life really is prebiotics. That's something you can really integrate in your everyday life far easier.
What are prebiotics?
Yeah, those are foods that will nurture and feed your good bacteria mostly, so that they have more power and they can take up more space.
And what are good bacteria when it comes to your gut? Because, again, you know, people think, well, all bacteria are bad, but we are more bacteria than we're anything else.
I think it's just a very interesting shift to see, actually, when you have the numbers. 95% of all bacteria on this whole planet won't do you anything. They won't harm you, and lots of them will really help you. Then just 5% can really cause disease, and those are the ones we hear about all the time. So we have a crooked picture of the thing, I think. And nurturing good bacteria, which can be, for example, lactic acid bacteria, things like from fermented foods, in yogurt, for example, or those, they can actually do some really neat stuff. They can nurture the upper cell lining of your gut. They can train your immune system in nice ways, you know, because we also think and suggest that there are bacteria that will irritate your immune system or not train it in a nice way. So there are some neat effects that those bacteria can do, and that's why you should feed them well. And we see in us industrialized cultures that we only eat half of the fibers and water-soluble fibers actually will nurture those bacteria, that we shouldn't. We only eat 50%. So having some more in your diet can actually have very nice effects.
Yes, I was really struck by a statement that you make that 80% of our immune system is located in the gut. Joining us on Life Matters this morning is Julia Enders. She's a microbiologist. She's author of an absolute international bestseller. It probably took her by surprise. It's called Gut, the Inside Story of Our Body's Most Underrated Organ, although it could be argued that we've become totally gut-obsessed in this era, I have to say, with obsessions about dietary intolerances and, you know, what we should eat and what we shouldn't eat and, you know, all number of experts giving dietary advice. Now, there's an awful lot in this book, and it's fabulously interesting, about poo and what we need to look for in our poo, how we should poo, and what's healthy poo and what's not healthy poo. It's a celebration of pooing. What should we all be doing based on the evidence that you've brought together to optimize that most basic function?
Yeah, I think you summed what I really liked what you just said is we have we have advice coming from everywhere. If you would listen to all of it, you would become crazy. There's just do that, do that, don't do that. And I really hated this when I started reading for my skin about the gut. I always just thought, well, explain it to me. You know, why should I do it? And just put it together in a picture. So I always really try to just explain the things and not tell people what to do. And so with the going to the toilet, I think it's a very basic thing. You can just turn around and check out, you know, what have I produced? What's the color? And is the consistency all right? And with sitting on the toilet, I think it's just interesting to know that there's a muscle that goes around the end of the colon and that will just pull a little bit and create a curve when you're sitting or standing, which naturally are our working positions. And this will make everything a little harder, so you have to press against this curve. And when you're actually in the position that we as mammals used to do this as human mammals, in a squatting position, then this muscle will loosen a little bit, it will relax, and then you don't have to use as much pressure. If you are a person that usually has to use some pressure, then so, this will take off pressure.
Yeah, so the idea that we should squat, and so many toilets in Asia involve squatting, that's a much easier, healthier way to go to the toilet.
What we see is that those countries who use those kinds of toilets or who go to the toilet in that way, they just have less things like hemorrhoids, they have less diverticulosis, they even have a smaller danger of varicosis or stroke in some parts, because this can be attributed to the pressure you have to use so many days a week and such a high pressure sometimes. So it's not the whole reason for everything, but it's one very interesting aspect.
Julia, you're doing your PhD in microbiology, and this you're in your mid-20s. You've got an international bestseller under your belt. Where are you going to take this this intrigue, this obsession that you formed with our gut and its health?
Well, I really hope I will take it exactly there where I always wanted to take it. I want to become a doctor. That's where I study medicine. And first thing I want to do is really get the experience and really know my craft and know how to be a good doctor and correct that. So that's why I did all this, the research and everything, to just spread some knowledge. And that's one part of being a doctor. And I took the time for that. And now I really want to take the time to get my experience, get my hands on.
Well, we've got a long way to go in terms of understanding how our gut works and affects our health. This is just the interesting beginning, I think. Thank you so much, Julia Enders, for joining us on Life Matters today. Much appreciated.
Thank you for having me.
And Julia is a microbiologist. She's doing her PhD in Germany at the Institute of Microbiology in Frankfurt. Her book, Gut, the inside story of our body's most underrated organ. It's published by Scribe. Details on the Life Matters website. Love to hear your gut stories if you have them. I've certainly become much more aware of my gut since having that appendix out earlier this year, let me tell you. And Elizabeth has reminded us on our Facebook page that Catalyst, ABC Television Science Program, did a great show about gut flora. And of course, you can find all the Catalyst stories on their website, all archived there as video and transcripts, I think.